How did something like a piece like this get sold out of the Maryland Hotel? Was there a little?
I'm telling you, Mr. What was his name, honey?
Erskine Campbell.
Erskine Campbell married Mrs.
Joseph Sefton.
And he was an interior decorator, I believe. And she and Campbell made trips all over the world collecting this sort of thing.
They had so much they kind of got rid of some of them.
So when they had so much on their hands, they decided to get rid of it. And he rented, I guess, a big room down in the Maryland Hotel where he had all his Oriental art and such as this. And they sold it very cheap.
Yeah.
Well, it was Depression years, I think.
Yeah, it was during the Depression.
I think they might have owned the hotel.
They may have.
I'm not sure they had. It was the first president.
But I remember, among the pieces that Donald acquired was one Buddha about this high, seated Buddha, and it was black. So Donald really had to scrounge to get money enough to buy it, probably cost as much as $35. And when he took it home, he decided to clean it. It was very heavy. So he cleaned it with something that turned out to be pure silver. I never forget when he called me up and said, I've got a silver Buddha.
Well, $35 was a lot of money.
Yes, it was.
Playing horse for about $35 in a real one. And China found in San Francisco, Eric was having a show at the Palace of Leisure and Honor. I heard that some of the artists told him it was one place where they had real things. And to go down there, but they were loved to show them. And so he said he didn't have any. And then Eric was teaching that subject at State College, and he began to discuss it. And he says, what is the matter about that idea of in a safe? So we went down. I'd always heard of those green dens, and went down.
Went in a go-down.
Go-down. It was just a ladder, you know, and then he opened the safe, and here was my daughter, and I was like,
it was a tang horse.
Tang horse, and we missed it. I said, if we get out of the hotel where we are, we've gone up there and we've got a chill, and we could stay in a
motel.
They didn't have a motel, but we could stay at something in group. It would be cheaper than this. And if we get out right now, we don't have to pay any more today. It was after lunch, but at the end of the day. And we would buy it. Well, we ran and did this. And so then someone... when we came home, this sign on a beautifully wrapped and it said, unwrap carefully and place on table tenderly. And then we told someone about where to go. And a man from San Francisco said, we need a more reputable place. It really had the real thing. Mm-hmm. So he told him about it. So he went down there and this man did the same thing. He didn't discuss it, so he didn't have anything. So finally, he said, but we had an artist friend from San Diego, and he said, you did. And he said, I remember him. His wife turned and said, if we got out of a hotel real fast, we could afford it. We thought he hadn't heard a thing. He had heard the whole conversation.
The beautiful tang horse. I gave it to my daughter.
One other thing you were mentioning about the, like some of the older group in the San Diego Contemporary Artists, and yet I think before we started this a conversation, you had mentioned, or I had mentioned to you about Fred Hawkes, and he would almost seem to be an exception because it all, from looking at his things, almost like he was born a modern.
Absolutely. You know, Fred Hawke is a very scholarly person. He doesn't look at the world the way everybody else does. He thinks in terms of the whole universe.
Yeah.
And a person who thinks in terms of the whole universe, he can't get to be bothered about one little bush out there, the way the painters were, you see. Yeah. So he's always been a modern.
Yeah.
He's an amazing man.
He delved deeper than just the what was visible, you see.
But yet, you know, he... we bought a couple of his paintings, and he showed us his, you know, paintings that he had for sale, and he had quite a few of them. And he would get the easel, he had the easel out, and he would pick up the painting, and he'd kind of look at it as he was picking it up, and he'd set it there, and, you know, for us to make our decision on what we wanted to buy. He would make absolutely no comment on it. He wouldn't say anything one way or the other about what it was or when he did it or anything. He'd keep looking at it, and he'd take it down, and he'd set it down, pick up another one, put it on, make no comment. Like, you know, he knew that we were going to buy a couple of paintings, and you would have thought that he would tried to give us a little bit of a sales talk on them, but he didn't. He didn't say anything about any of them.
Mm-hmm. He was almost embarrassed showing us this one.
Yeah.
He's pretty old.
Yeah, he's old.
90, I think he's 92 or something like that.
He's so erect, tall, and good spirits.
He used to sit by this fireplace with me and talk about things that were out in space around us, you know. He didn't get nip got down to earth.
I asked him, though, one of the things is, I had read what I could that they had in the library on them, and which isn't very much, unfortunately. I think there should be really more on them, and there isn't. But anyway, I noted that he was in San Francisco. I think he came there in 1903. And so I says to him, were you there during the San Francisco earthquake? And he said, oh, yes. And he told us all about, you know, his experience when the quake hit, and, you know, which is very unusual to hear somebody that can vividly remember the...
She can't remember it, but she was born on that day.
Oh, is that right? In San Diego. Yeah.
As far as my mother is concerned, the city had burned. They say she forgot to nurse me. She was so excited. Los Angeles didn't... interest her at all. San Francisco has always been called the city.
Yeah.
It used to be called this. And so that was April 19th. I was born April 1906. Oh, I know exactly when it was.
Yeah. One thing about Fred Hawks is, though, that he his hearing is very bad, and he for some reason, he seems to have some kind of a hang-up on ear, you know,
hearing
aid, and he just won't. He feels that there's something wrong with hearing aids, and they just don't work right for him, and so as a result, we went to see him. I think about 3-4 months ago, and. It was very difficult to talk with him because he didn't have his hearing aid in. And he says, all of the hearing aids I've got, he says, they're no good. And so as a result, I almost have to write questions out to him because he just doesn't, he doesn't hear hardly at all anymore. And that's too bad. I think a hearing aid would help him, but for some reason he doesn't
those
seem...
Sometimes those who have them turn them off.
Yeah.
There's a very good advantage when you go to a cocktail party. All I have to do is do that, and I have a plug in my ear.
Oh, yeah?
I not only can't hear, but I'm blocked out more than that.
Well, that's okay, or you can be like me, and I have an ability when I don't think much of the conversation, I just tune the whole thing right out.
So often I know that he hears, but he just...
Eileen tells me that I hear only what I want to hear.
Paul's had me tuned out for 30 years.
Well, Eileen has said, I won't tell you that I think I got this hearing aid because in self-defense. In fact, to say walking a lot, and I used to have breakfast way at that far end, and she was in the bed at this end downstairs.
No, we have an apartment.
And she would insist on talking to me. Of course, I couldn't hear her. So I'd have to get up and run in there and say, "What did you say?" Then I'd go back, and no sooner than I'd back, she said something else, and I'd have to run back again. So I said, "I'm going to get a hearing aid." Now I can sit at the breakfast room table and hear her.
I would correct my column or find out how much I had to do the next day by reading the paper. And so then he used to get up some of his lectures at the breakfast table and read Spanish. He studied Spanish a lot. So we always had separate breakfasts.
One final question, and I just thought of this. Do you think that San Diego artists were maybe hurt a little bit by being down in this very southwest corner of the United States, being out of, say, the mainstream of San Francisco, New York, Chicago?
Yes, I think probably so, especially if they were not interested in keeping in contact with what was going on in those other places. I think we were in a sort of a backwater here.
Yeah.
But that didn't matter, really. The great artists at Siena were always, they were in a backwater.
Yeah.
And they painted things that didn't look like any other painting in Italy.
Yeah.
And it was just as good.
Yeah, well, like I know I interviewed Phillips. What was his first name? Anyway, he was a Taos artist. Gear Phillips. I can't remember his first name now. Gee, I should remember because I interviewed.
Oh, Phillips. You know, his son was.
His son is with
the gas company.
Gas and electric company. Well, I interviewed not Phillips because he's been dead for a number of years, but I interviewed his son, who is a man in his.
Ralph Phillips.
Yeah, he's a man in his 70s, I guess.
Sure.
And. The thing is, now that group was in a kind of an out-of-the-way place in Taos, but they had some connections with New York, apparently. They had a constant exhibit heading toward New York City, and that's how I think that...
James Lawrence and all the writers came there, too.
Yeah.
Now, that is so true. Even Los Angeles wasn't noticed much. In those early days, unless you sent your work back to the center of things, which was New York in those days, you were not going to be noticed much.
In the early days, you would send to the Pennsylvania Academy, I used to
Chicago
Art Institute, and different, the Museum of Modern Art in New York, we would send paintings all the time to their juried shows. Mm-hmm. And now back home at the New York Fair, a lot of them. I think a lot, if you'll notice...
Which one was that, the...
Pacina doll.
Oh.
Wasn't that... Pacina doll was at the New York Exposition, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But
World's Fair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to that when I was a kid.
But we would exhibit there, and I noticed that in some of the rival stories, they were winning prizes and doing things. They were sending, at least... They'd ship them off, and it was Charles Reifel, as you said, who encouraged it. Everybody didn't even know about the San Francisco.
No, I didn't.
We had just arrived. Mm-hmm. I hadn't lived here, but we'd been back. We didn't know about the show or anything they were having here.
Yeah.
But we were sending east, but not there. He had his shows at Houston Museum, and then in the south, and then the Atlanta High Museum. Southern.
When I first came here, the Fine Arts Gallery was putting on an exhibition every year of the art of California artists. And as a result, those artists would not only, from San Francisco and Los Angeles, would not only send their works here, but many of them would come down here to see the show. And we got to know them. We had better contacts with those people up the coast then than a short time later we didn't.
Yeah.
But I think that exhibition, that annual exhibition of California painters, was a very good thing for the artists.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it was.
There was an exhibition, see, this one was at the Philadelphia show, but there was one, and I thought this was contemporary, which your group that you're talking about, and it was called the Six Contemporary Artists of California. I think you must have had a group name like that, I think.
I don't remember.
Here's Reitland Braun.
Well, how about Sherman Trees? Did you know Sherman?
Well, he was a photographer.
A photographer?
He was just a photographer.
Because we have a painting of his.
I never heard of him painting a picture in my life.
I'll show you a beautiful portrait. Now, here's interesting. You're in pre-showing a contemporary painting of 16 Southern California artists.
Yeah, that is.
This is in Los Angeles. And Arthur Ames. Doris.
No, we knew Sherman Trees very well. In fact, I have two or three paintings, pictures, photographs of my wife and me up the steps here.
And he by made. Him?
By I'll him, yeah.
Was there?
Oh, yeah, and also Paul.
Well, I know who you mean, but I never did think much of his work.
We have a very small
maybe I would if I saw it again.
We have a very small one like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a large one, looks like a cliff, and your little road going up to the cliff, and then you can see the mountains in the background.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't figure out what his name was. You know, I couldn't
P-O-H-L.
Read his. Yeah, but I couldn't, the way he painted it on there, I couldn't make it out.
Yeah.
And a man that has a number of Otto Schneider paintings and a few other paintings, he came in to our house and he looked and he saw that a little and he said, oh, you got a pole. And I says, how did you say that? And he told
had.
Me, he says, P-H-O-L, I think it is.
P-O-H-L.
Yeah, P-O-H-L, yeah. And so anyway, he, so then I knew who it was and I says, is he considered to be pretty good? And he says, yeah, he says, as a matter of fact, they're starting to kind of revive them up in Los Angeles. They're starting to collect his things.
Now, if I were to see his painting now, I might like it.
Yeah.
But when he was painting around here, all the other artists thought he was making pot boilers.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they call it.
Yeah. It's a beautiful look. This is Everett.
That Sherman Trees did that.
And Sherman Trees did that.
Yeah, that is nice.
He was an artist, photographer, wasn't he?
Oh, yes.
Yes,
he was. Oh, yes. Well, beautiful.
We have other Sherman Trees, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, that's surprising that you never knew that
we
he did any
that
painting.
He painted.
Yeah.
I never did in my
life.
Yeah, I wish I'd
known.
Yeah.
We used to run around. We used to go to parties with him, picnics and so forth.
Well,
maybe
he was a little self-conscious of his painting. Maybe he didn't feel that he was.
I wouldn't
was
be surprised if he painted, but he didn't let anybody know it. Neither did Daumier, I think.
The subject.
Well, I think it's trees with a little, with some mountains in the background.
Well, you know.
A lot of art we buy, you know, it strikes us as being very good, and we buy it.
Mm-hmm.
We bring it home, and then we check up on it. And it's always a listed artist.
A listed artist?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, we will buy it like at little sales or maybe when we're back east going to small little antique shops. We bought a rifle back around south of Buffalo.
Yeah, just south of Buffalo.
And Paul spotted it down, she had it down the floor.
Just a little.
And she said, that's a French artist. And she had it spelled Real. She says,
yeah.
That's Real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way he signs his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Paul looked at it and he says, no, he says, that's Rifle. And she said, do you know him? And Paul says, yes, I know him, but very few other people do because, you know, he really isn't as well known
mm-hmm.
as she is.
And she asked me if he was a known painter and I says, well, I says, there's some people that know him. She says, did he paint in California?
No.
I says, yeah. I says, he painted in California, and I said, he also painted for a while here in Buffalo. And I says, well, then he must be pretty well known. I says, well, I don't think hardly anybody knows him in Buffalo, and I says, not too many people know him in San Diego.
He painted in Silver Mine, Connecticut. That's where he
Yeah. Was. Yeah, that was a colony, I guess, something like the Taos.
You have that book on him, don't
you? Yes. On Freeze.
The
woman then was afraid that maybe she was selling something that was
really
valuable, and and so anyway, last year we were back in Buffalo, and I called the Knox Albright Art Gallery in Buffalo because I had read where the director years ago back, I think about 1918 or along in there, had saw some of Rifle's little sketches and stuff that he did, and bought them for the gallery, and was so impressed with them that he bought them for the gallery. And I've heard since that some of the galleries do get rid of some of their paintings that are just sitting, and there's no longer any interest.
Yeah.
And so I called the Knox Albright Gallery and asked them if they had any paintings that they were maybe thinking of selling. That I says, I'm especially interested in a painter by the name of Charles Rifle. And he says, who told you we're going to sell any paintings? And I says, well, nobody told me. I says, it's just the idea that I would, I thought maybe you might be, and I would be interested in this particular artist. And she says, just a minute. And she turns me over to the assistant director, and the assistant director again wanted to know who told me that they were going to be selling any paintings. And I said, well, nobody did. But I says, I just thought that they might be, you may have something for sale, and I would be interested in this painter, the Charles Rifle. I says, he did paint here in Buffalo for a while. And she says, how do you spell his name? And so, obviously, he had been so long forgotten there that she didn't even know, by the name that I was giving, that he even existed. So, but anyway, she says, well, I'll check in and see if we have anything by him. But she says, we wouldn't sell anything. And I found out later that I think it was, he was one of the, he's the host of one of the talk shows. He bought a bunch of really fine paintings that one of the bigger galleries, that they were just sitting gathering dust, I guess, in their basements, and so they sold them, and it turned out that several of them were pretty valuable paintings. And so they didn't want anything like that to happen again, because it apparently was very adverse publicity for them.
Now, what do you call that? What is that word? Deaccession? The deaccession thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we have, it's a thing cannot be gotten rid of unless the donor had no strings on it, you see. And I imagine it would be very easy to make some big mistakes by getting rid of some things.
My wife and I bought a couple of Rifle paintings from a church over near University Hospital. And they sold them because there was no strings on the paintings as far as the church was concerned. They just donated them a number of years ago, and so they said they wanted to sell them. So I heard about it, and so I went, and they asked me to put a bid in. So I put a bid on them, and this was about 18, I guess about 12 years ago, and I put a bid in on them, and because we liked them so well, and I think there was three rifle paintings, and after I put the bid in on them, it'll have to go before the board, and it'll probably take maybe a month or so, and after I put the bid in the home, says to Rita, says, the thing is now, I says, if they accept the bid, I says, how am I going to pay for them?
You didn't have any money.
<That used to be. laughs> So anyway, about a month later, they said your offer is an acceptable offer, and so this is you can have the painting. So it just happened that. In our business, things picked up a little bit, and I had some money, and so I bought.
There used to be a real estate agent here in San Diego by the name of Mitchell, and he collected rifles. He used to have scabs of them.
Is that Glenn Mitchell?
Glenn Mitchell.
Oh, Glenn Mitchell, is that right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he used to have a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I don't guess he's living now, is he?
I think he is up in Pine Valley. Uh-huh. Yeah. He lives out in Pine Valley.
Pretty old. Yeah. Well, anyway, he collected rifles. And he once asked me where he could get rid of them. He had more than he needed.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to buy them.
This is not a box. Him all of his prize money.
I don't think.
It's a little booklet.
A little catalog mm-hmm. of exhibitions.
I was looking through there to see if maybe there was some of the paintings that we had.
Well, I think it's been a very excellent interview, and I think we've learned a lot more about the San Diego contemporary artists than we knew before. Some of your anecdotes were excellent.
Well, I knew them, but at least I thought I knew them, but I don't have much to say.
Mm. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure for me to tell you what little I did know and also to talk to you and your wife.
Thank you.